4. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 56 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show. It's Monday, October 27th, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. My main man, Chase Brumfield, is manning the controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. Got a good show on tap for you today. We're going to run it down here in just a moment. First, though, I need to tell you, as always, this hour of the Gary Harris Show being brought to you by Alabama Credit Union, member-owned and not-for-profit. It's just a better way of banking. I encourage you to find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com, Alabama Credit Union. Loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. If you're eligible for membership, then join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, here's the lineup for today. 9:30, Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, Tider Insider TV. 10:30, Casey Smith on golf. Plus, we've got the Kalen DeBoer South Carolina Saturday postgame press conference that we'll get to. And we'll take your phone calls beginning here in just a couple of moments on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. First to the business of the day, Alabama 29, South Carolina 22. And this one followed the script of some painful losses from a year ago. This one was on track to be a season, not a season ruiner, but a season letdown that could have had impact going forward for the college football playoff, the SEC championship game. And Alabama found a way to come back and win it, scoring 15 points in the final two-plus minutes to beat South Carolina in Columbia at Williams-Brice Stadium, 29-22. As I said Saturday night on my social media analysis, I didn't get into stats. I didn't get into a technical analysis. I simply got into the fact that Alabama found a way to win the game. And as we've been discussing all season long in the modern-day SEC, it's much like the NFL. Winning is what matters. How you get to that point, yes, it's nice if you can go out and just, curb stop people. But that's very unlikely that you're going to be able to do that. And for the most part, these games are going to be, they're going to be battles. And that was the case on Saturday against the motivated South Carolina team at home. What would have been a field storm game. Their students had already moved down to the lower level and prepared to storm the field when Alabama took the air out of Williams-Brice Stadium. So the Crimson Tide deserves a lot of credit for finding a way to win that game after four previous games in 4 weeks with wins over ranked teams at Georgia, at home against Vanderbilt, at Mizzou, and at home against Tennessee. And then you go play a team where you're a double-digit favorite, and not many people are giving that team a chance. And it's easy to forget that they were a college football playoff contender in most people's eyes going into the season. And this is a team that I had picked preseason to beat Alabama. I had Alabama going 10-2 with losses at Georgia and at South Carolina. So you saw the best version of South Carolina, and I'm sure their fans are frustrated thinking, not only should they have won that game, but if they had played that well for most of the season, that they would have won more games. But I give Alabama credit. At the same time, you're glad the bye week is here. You would not want to have to play another game this week. This team, is fatigued and now needs to get healthy and get rested for the stretch run of four games in 4 weeks at home against LSU, at home against Oklahoma, at home against Eastern Illinois, and on the road in the Iron Bowl against Auburn. So that's the way it went down. Alabama pulls it out, did not play well, still had a lead 14-6 at half, and, falls behind, as I mentioned, 22-14, and then is able to score 15 points in the final two-plus minutes. A touchdown, a two-point conversion to tie it. And then Deontay Lawson forced a fumble on Lenora Sellers. Incredible play to rip the ball out, which led Alabama to be able to score a touchdown. Jeremy Bernard in the final, 25, 30 seconds. And then the defense did not allow South Carolina any type of miracle comeback. Also, LSU making a change at head coach. Brian Kelly is out, and that's the modern world. I'll track down and run down all of these coach openings for you in a little bit. It's incredible where we're at. $53 million, I think, buyout for Brian Kelly. All right, phone calls are lined up. So we're going to go ahead and take a call in this segment and then get to a couple in the next segment. Let's go ahead and get Pat on, and he's going to have some analysis for us. Hey, good morning, Pat.
Hey, good morning, Gary. But Gary, on Bernard's play, can you explain to me? It looked like the defender for South Carolina was holding his hands up for to signal touchdown. Was he told to flag him on through so that they might possibly have enough time to go down and score a touchdown their own self and go into another overtime?
From what I understand, that was what their strategy was, which I don't understand at all. There's a couple of things about that play. First of all, what you said was the defender kind of pulled back on him, and I don't know if Beamer was trying to cover for the player, but he said afterwards that the plan there was to let Bernard score so that they'd have a chance to get the ball back. I don't understand that in a tie game. If you're behind, I get it, because if you're behind by a point or whatever, then, Alabama's just going to run the clock out. But in that situation, there's no guarantee you're going to make a field goal there. It could be a bad snap. You could block it. He could miss it. Jesse Palmer said that Bernard should have fallen down. No, he shouldn't. Not in a tie game. If you've got a chance to score a touchdown there, you do it. You don't leave it up to a field goal. So, if that was South Carolina's plan, I don't agree with it, but I was glad that Jeremy Bernard scored the touchdown there and Alabama went up 7.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if you had money on the football game or something.
Well, that's what a lot of people are going to think now with all the stuff out there with the gambling. I don't know.
I'm making a joke.
I know, but you're not the only one saying that, but I know that it worked out well for Alabama, and that's one of those games that, you steal one like that on the road, it could be big for your season. It keeps everything in front of you, and a loss would have been a loss.
We'll quit.
Going into the bye week, to lose that game, it would have been awful around here.
Yeah, two quick questions. I wish we could have played the whole game on offense. I'm talking about people catching the football the way they did on the last drive. A whole lot of that stuff was not Ty Simpson was hitting people in the hands with what was throwing the ball in catchable spots, and we had so many drops that it hurt my feelings. But from what I understand, Daniel Moore has it on the easel that this is going to be called Miracle in the Chicken Coop by Lawson.
You think? Yeah, man. Well, good stuff, Pat. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you, Pat. All right, it is 9:16, and we're going to go ahead and take our first time out. When we come back on the other side, we've got Cam and Corey. We'll get to your phone calls. Rodney Orr coming up at 9:30 on the Gary Harris Show. We'll be right back.
Here's what's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good morning, it's Mary Kay from the Town Square Media Newsroom. Next week, the city of Tuscaloosa will host a special ceremony at the Benjamin Barnes YMCA to unveil statues honoring the Marshall Four. The tribute recognizes Tuscaloosa natives who attended Marshall University to play football as some of the first African-American athletes from Tuscaloosa on scholarships at a major university. For more details about the event, log on to TuscaloosaThread.com. Daylight Daylight saving time ends on Sunday, November 2nd at 2 o'clock in the morning when clocks officially fall back 1 hour.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend to reminisce on college days or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and 3 special.
Lowe's. We help. You save. Selection varies by location.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
Gary Harris Show. We got a ton of phone calls we're going to try to get to. There is some debate, I understand, about the decision to, you know, let Bernard score. My point is it's a tie game. You can't assume anything. If you're behind, you know, by a point, you know, maybe you let him score. I'm just saying that you extend the game as long as you can. There's no guarantee that Alabama's going to be able to make a field goal. And you say, well, they could have scored a touchdown and ran the time down. It could be a fumble. There could be a lot of things. It's a tie game. I'm not letting the guy score. That's my take on it. And it didn't work out for South Carolina the way they played it. I promise you that. All right, let's take some phone calls. Cam is next up. We got a ton of calls. So we're going to have to go pretty quickly. Hey, Cam.
Good morning, brother. How you doing over there?
Doing well, man.
It's a beautiful day in North Georgia. You know, we get your weather about 5 hours later, and it just rolled through. So, no, you like the rain, and I couldn't drive my bike today. It's too wet, so I had to do a walk.
Yeah, but it's been terrific. We needed it. We got a good soak in here. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love it when you post it. Hey, man, my neighbors told me, you know, up here in Georgia, it was Vegas. Vegas called the board instead of called Beamer and let him score. That's what Georgia Bulldogs said. They need Alabama in the 12. And that this would have pushed us because we're probably going to lose at Auburn. I hate to tell you that, Nation. So we're probably going to lose another game this year. But anyway, I don't know how I feel about this. So this is the third coach to be fired, right? So far, Florida, Penn State, and LSU, right?
No, it's many more than that.
There's more?
It's Florida, Arkansas, and LSU just in the SEC.
Yeah.
I got the whole list that I'll run down, but it's you know, it's about, I think,
how
it's about
10 coaches. I mean, wasn't there used to be a gentleman's agreement or something? Didn't we usually wait and happen at the end of the
year? Well, in-season firings used to be pretty rare, but that's not the way it is anymore. This is big business. There's money driving all of this. These athletic directors are agreeing to terrible contracts with these buyouts, but they're still firing these guys and paying them millions of dollars to go away. Scott Woodward, the athletic director, hired Jimbo Fisher at A&M. He hired Brian Kelly at LSU.
I heard his name before, yeah.
Yeah, so, but that's where we're at, man.
How do you feel about it?
I don't like it. You know, Nick Saban warned us about all of
this. You're an LSU fan. Are you happy today?
Yeah, LSU fans are happy. They were done with Brian Kelly. But that doesn't mean it's a good way to do business. And Nick Saban warned us about all this. He said the bowl games would be meaningless. The thirst for victory would outweigh common sense. That's just where we're at now, Cam. I don't like it. But it's we're gonna see.
So
we're gonna see more and more
now,
of it.
All of our coaches now, instead of, you know, worrying about the game. Well, not next week. We got a bye. Good God, thank you. So now, hey, Florida wants you, Kiffin. Everybody wants you. Don't worry about the game or the season. Just worry about off the zero. So you know how he was distracted when Saban cut him loose because he was a commodity. So now these coaches have to fend off the calls from their agents saying, but everybody wants you, everybody wants you. But it's just, I'm just playing football, dude. The players make more than the coaches. The coaches can't make it through the season. You got Yellowwood spots to stay and cut these people loose. Maybe not him. But you know what? I'm going to cut it short. I got to finish my walk. Remember, it's never over, Gary, until it's over.
That's a fact, Cam. That's for sure. Thank you very much. Let's get to Corey in Trussville. Hey, Corey.
Good morning, Gary. How you doing this morning?
Doing great.
I was really proud the way Alabama pulled it out because I was nervous about that game all week. That even though South Carolina was not a good team, they were capable of playing spoiler, and they nearly did. And week and rest up. We can hit the home stretch and get to Atlanta. But I was just shocked that A&M just toyed around with LSU. I don't know about you, but I don't want to play A&M if I can avoid it, because to me, I think they're the most complete team in the country. I know LSU's not good right now, but they look just about unstoppable. If they play the way they played the second half all season, they're just about unstoppable.
Well, you know, it is what it is. I mean, teams look great. But, you know, you play whoever you have to play. If Alabama goes to Atlanta and A&M is there, they'll play them. If they get run into them in the playoffs, I thought on Saturday night A&M looked awesome. I thought that they looked like they had 13 guys on defense. They just totally ate LSU up. But you know what? Alabama can play with any of these teams. I don't think Alabama should fear anybody. Doesn't mean they're going to win the national championship, but we've seen this before where teams look incredible. But you got to remember the week before, A&M was fortunate to get out of Arkansas with a win. So they gave up, I think, 42 points. So it's an Arkansas team that just lost to Auburn. So it's a week-to-week endeavor. It's about matchups, timing, all of it's important. But I don't think A&M's unbeatable, I can tell you that.
Who did you take in the Auburn-Arkansas game?
I thought that Arkansas in the second half, Taylen Green, who had a good year, made too many mistakes. You can't they made too many mistakes. They had three straight turnovers, but he had two interceptions. One of them was a pick six. Another one set up a touchdown. Then one of his completions, the receiver dropped the ball. I thought Auburn making the quarterback change was long overdue. I thought Daniels gave him some juice. I think Jackson Arnold had run his course. That pick six he threw right before the half was as bad a pick six as he'll ever throw. I mean, that high school quarterbacks don't make mistakes like that. So I think Auburn's going to be better with Ashton Daniels going forward. I do. I think their defense is good. I think they got a chance to win some games. So that'll be a tough game in the Iron Bowl at the end of the season. But for Arkansas, you know, that was a bad loss, because after you know, playing Tennessee well and playing A&M well, they had a team in Auburn that they felt like they could win at home against, and they didn't. So good win for Auburn. Hey, Corey, great call, man. Got to run. We're going to try to get all these calls in. They are ringing off for me this morning. So let's keep it going. Let's get to Ellis. Hey, Ellis.
Good morning, Gary Harris.
Good morning.
I just want to say I was talking to somebody this weekend, and I think that we were mentally and physically exhausted coming into this game from that grind we've been on. So I had a feeling we was going to be down a little bit, but a good team always finds a way to win. So, and we found a way to win the game, and we did it.
Yeah, they did, Ellison. That's the key. The end of the day, you add them up, man. You know, wins in the win column, loss in the loss column, and it doesn't matter how, man. It's not about how; it's how many. Hey, great call, Ellis. We're going to try to squeeze in one more before we get to the break. I hate to cut everybody short, but they are stacked up, and we have to get the break. And one other thing, a lot of people this morning are saying they knew it was going to be a tough game, but I didn't see too many predictions for Alabama fans saying it was going to be a tough game. I saw 45-10 and 38-3, and I had it 28-10, and that was one of the closer ones that I saw. I thought that South Carolina's defense was pretty good. So I'm not saying that a lot of people didn't think it was going to be a tough game, but most of the predictions didn't reflect that. All right, let's get to Phillip here before we close out the segment. Hey, Phillip.
How are you, Gary? I had a 23-20 Alabama, but I just want to, again, give my thanks to Josh Playlis, Mr. Clutch, Mr. Reliable. He is such a valuable member of this team. He does it week in and week out. He's such a clutch player. But, and another thing, Gary, I will say I agree with you on that play where Bernard scored. You want to try to do everything you can to alter the outcome like that. You can knock the ball away from Bernard. You can cause a fumble. There's so many things you can do right there. And I don't know. I'm glad they did what they did. Thank goodness. But you be a headhunter at that point and try to do something.
I'm with you, Phillip. I've got a lot of people texted me, several, that said, you know, no, you got to let him score there. You got to get the ball back for your offense. Not when it's tight. I've seen a lot stranger things happen. You know, if you push him out there at the 5-yard line, there's no guarantee that you're going to score a touchdown. And if you have to kick a field goal, all kinds of things can go wrong. And if you do score a touchdown in the final play of the game, then or kick a field, then you just lose. But they lost anyway. I mean, down 7, you can say all you want about teams. Game's never over till it's over. But when you're down 7 with 25 seconds to play, that's unlikely. But that's the way they decided to play it. I'm glad Alabama scored a touchdown there on that play. I didn't want to have to run any more plays. I was glad Alabama got in the end zone right there. And even in the modern game, with crazy things that happen, I'll take my chances with a 7-point lead and 20-something seconds to go in the ball. I think they started at like their 12-yard line or something like that. I'll take my chances right there.
Yeah, well, that's a 10-4 on that, Gary. I'll talk to you tomorrow, man.
All right, thank you. All right, man, everybody did a good job listening, getting their calls in, and we still got out at 9:30. So we are going to take a timeout, and then we're going to come back with Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com and Tider Insider TV for his weekly segment. Great phone calls this morning. Again, I hate we had to move through them kind of quickly, but appreciate everybody getting on and saying their piece and letting me get to the break. We'll be back with Tider Insider, Rodney Orr, after this.
JR.com, where you pick it out and we'll work it out. On select models with approved credit plus tax, registration, and dealer fees. See dealer for details. Expires month end.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good times.
A national championship team covering a national championship team.
The best sports talk in the state.
Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Into the Gary Harris Show. It's time for Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, TiderInsider TV. Okay, I am getting blown up this morning on my phone, which I appreciate. I like it. And about the decision for South Carolina to say they let Bernard score. Also, if you've seen this report about Harold Perkins being in the portal, all right, I get people get a lot of kicks out of this. No Three Sports is a fake website, okay? It is not on Three Sports. No Three Sports seems to be able to get – they bought the blue check and everything. But if you see something from No Three Sports, it's a parody, okay? It's not on Three Sports. No Three Sports is not on Three Sports. And Harold Perkins is not in the portal. I'm not saying that he won't go in the portal. You never know. But don't be fooled by No Three Sports, okay? I just want to get that out there. Good morning, Rodney. How are you?
I'd like to know who the creator of No Three is.
I just don't understand how you have enough time on your hands to get pleasure out of putting out fake reports. But they get it over on people all the time because their logo looks the same. And I'm not saying Harold Perkins won't go in the portal. I don't know what he's going to do. But as of right now, I mean, he's not available. He's playing for the LSU Tigers, and I expect to see him in 2 weeks here in Tuscaloosa. All right, Rod, let's get to Alabama first. And also had a lot of people texted me about it was the right decision if that's what LSU did to let Jeremy Bernard score. So I'll just start right there. I don't think in a tie game you ever let anybody score. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you fumble the next play. You can't assume you'll score a touchdown if you push the guy out at the 5 or 6 yard line. You might have a bad snap on a field goal attempt. You might miss it. You might get it blocked. I'm going to play it out if I'm South Carolina there. But if that's what they decided to do, thank you, because it worked out well for Alabama is all I've got to say.
Yeah, no, I thought it was it's a questionable move. And I tell you why. Again, I understand they had no timeouts, right? And they probably felt like Alabama was going to run the clock down and kick the winning field goal. And again, this is nothing against Connor Talty, okay? But he's never been in that spot before. You know, if you know kind of your opponent, you say, okay, this is a really kind of an inexperienced kicker. I know he's been pretty good from 40 and in, but anything can happen. As you mentioned, bad snap, pressure gets to him. You know, I mean, anything can happen. So to me, in that situation, I would have probably just said, okay, we're going to, even though it's a bit risky, we're going to take our chances and see if we can block the kick. Something can happen. Hey, don't forget, you remember, what was it, 1989, Thomas Raham blocked the kick against Penn State. Anything can happen, okay? So you don't allow the other team to score. It, to me, in that situation, I would have forced them to try to make the field goal.
Yeah, and some people are saying Alabama might have ran it in for a touchdown. Well, they might not have either. You know, we saw Lenore Sellers get the ball snapped out, so ripped out. So anyway, I was glad to see Bernard score right there. I'll take my chances, even in the modern game of football, when you've got a team with no timeouts starting inside their 20 with 20-something seconds to go, and Alabama gets the win.
Yeah, I think from Alabama's perspective, it's the right thing. Score the touchdown, take it.
Absolutely.
There.
I couldn't believe Jesse Palmer was saying he needs to fall down. No way. You score there. 100%, Rod. It worked out beautifully. All right, you're down 22-14 with 2 minutes plus to go in the game. You score 15 points. People, you know, it's easy to forget Alabama had to go for two on that first touchdown to tie it up. And you score 15 points. You deserve to win the game. At the same time, it was like pulling teeth. And, you know, you texted me that you felt like this was a game that last year Alabama would not have won. And I agree. I mean, they've taken steps to find a way to win these type of games. And it was a huge win. I mean, we don't even want to think about what this show would be like this morning with you and I on the phone if Alabama had lost that game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it would have been a miserable, you know, and honestly, I was already thinking we'll be right back to square one. We'll be right where we were, you know, 7-8 weeks ago. I know that Alabama's won some big games, you know, Georgia, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Tennessee. That's an epic run right there. No doubt. It's a gauntlet. But at the same time, you lose to a downtrodden South Carolina team. You can't spin it. It would have been a horrible loss. Especially after all you accomplished. I understand the team was tired. I understand it was a real challenge to go on the road. And I know a lot of people say, like I said, they're a downtrodden team, should have dominated them. Well, I mean, there are a lot of circumstances here. This is a team, Alabama, that was gassed. It needed a bye in the most desperate way. And, you know, had to go out there and gut one out at South Carolina. So that is true as well. But at the same time, you lose that game, it starts right back up. I mean, that's just the way it is. And fortunately, you know, Alabama really showed the maturity and leadership. We talked about this last week on TiderInsider.com. I said, going to South Carolina, I know a lot of people are scared, but I think this team has the maturity and the leadership that won't allow that to happen. And, you know, with about 5-6 minutes left in the game, we're really concerned that it might happen. But again, the maturity, the leadership, came through in the end. They found a way to win, and that's really all you needed to do to get to the bye.
That's right. And now you're set up perfectly. There are points in every game. I'll be honest with you. Felt very good that Alabama had a 14-6 lead at the half, because I thought they'd been outplayed. But in the third quarter, Alabama was up 14-6, and they went for it on fourth down. I can't remember, Rodney, you probably can tell me, but it was fourth and several. I mean, it was another one of those plays that, you know, you could have punted it down deep. I don't know if Grubb and DeBoer felt like, you know what, we're not playing well enough offensively. We got to try to get points. But Ty gets pressured, gets hit, but delivers the ball beautifully to Ryan Williams, and he dropped it. And then I think it was the very next play, you know, out around midfield, where, you know, sudden change, give Mike Shula credit. He dialed it up, and they got behind the defense and made the touchdown. And the next thing you know, we got ourselves a tie ball game, because I think they went for two and made it. And or if they didn't, it was, you know, regardless, they were back in the game. and I know we've talked about Ryan Williams, the drops, and he makes incredible plays, but what do you think it is about sometimes uncontested catches? And it wasn't the easiest catch because the ball was floated, but, I mean, if you're going to be a championship-caliber team, these are the kind of plays that you've got to make. And I am concerned about Ryan Williams' propensity for dropping the football.
Well, let me say this. I'm going to go back. I think we're talking about the same sequence here. I really thought this is me, and I understand the call on second down if we're talking about the same sequence, and I think we are. I understand on second down, that's a call right there that you have second one and you throw the ball deep like they did. It shouldn't have been thrown into double coverage. He probably had an alternate route he could have, you know, picked out, Ty. But he threw it into double coverage. But here's the thing. I think on the road, in the SEC, you're playing against a team that you're really superior than, should be. Even though you're not showing it at that time, it's a time to take the game over. That's just me. That was my feeling. On second and one, while I understand the call, I say you run it there. I say you pound it. You get the first down. You start taking the game over at the line of scrimmage. You march the ball down, and you get a score, and all of a sudden you're in control. That's the way I looked at it there. I'm not saying that's a bad call at all that Grubb made, because I think a lot of offensive coordinators in that position probably make that call, and I'm certainly not an offensive coordinator. But I would say that just the feel of it was, let's take this game over right now. You know, that's the SEC. That's where in the SEC you have to be able to, as a superior team, take the game over. So to me, on that second and one, they should have pounded the ball and kept pounding the ball to get the first down. Okay, then you get into that fourth down thing with Ryan Williams. I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know how to answer it with Ryan dropping that pass. I don't know if it's something in his head or what it is. But, you know, he's better than that. And that was a really clutch drop there at that moment, if you want to say clutch. But I'll tell you another thing, too, Gary. This is a beat-up football team, Alabama. And on that play, that fourth down play, Ty took a hit to the midsection, if you remember that, and almost cut him in half. And, you know, my understanding is Ty was really rocked on the play. I mean, it took him a little bit of time to regather himself. So back to what I said earlier, this is a team that was really struggling and gassed. This week they've got right now, it's really big because it's going to give them time to kind of recover, recuperate, get their mind straight, even like Ryan Williams, you know, continue to work on getting that mind straight. And it's a really big moment for this team to get back on track physically and mentally. They need the break. And so this couldn't come at a better time.
I agree 100% with everything that you said. Second and short in games like this, get the first down. I mean, you don't have to try to hit the big plays all the time. I thought that was one area, I'm with you, that Alabama got a little cute. And I love the trick plays. I thought the two-point conversion, but, you know, you like them when they work. But, and just like with Proctor, that decision to run him down on the goal line when you've got Daniel Hill, who is 240 pounds and is a running back. I'm kind of getting burned out on that a little bit. But let me ask
you know what I really thought there, Gary? I really thought that when they lined up like that with Proctor, okay, they're going to use him as a decoy this time. And so I thought ultimately it was a wasted play down there, to be honest with you. But I thought, hey, if they use him as a decoy, that might, you know, open something up. But I will say this about Grubb, too. And again, I'm not trying to be overly critical, but here I'm trying to be really positive that, man, he has some real calls in his pocket down there inside the 10, and also in situations where, like the third and whatever it was against Georgia there at the end, that they needed to get the play. And what a play call that was with the throw to a jam. But these calls down at the goal line that he made, man, they were really – well-designed and well done. I mean, he does a really good job on those calls for the most part.
Yeah, they're incredible. I mean, you're right. He always has got something in his pocket. hey, like I said, Alabama won the game. And it's a lot of people have messaged me now, say they were worried about this game, concerned about this game. But most of the people that were on my radio show were talking about 45-3 and 38-3. I think there's a little bit of revisionist history going on. But I want to say this for Alabama too, is that South Carolina is a capable football team. I mean, this was a team that going into the season was being picked by a lot of people, me included, to be a college football playoff contender. And I picked Alabama to lose this game in the preseason. I had them going 10-2 with losses at Georgia and South Carolina. So it's not like they have bad football players. And Rodney, you know what Alabama brings out in people. It brings out an opportunity. This was going to be a field storm game. I mean, they were already lining up. This was a chance for them to take a bad season and really not only set themselves up for a stretch run, but to have a moment of you know, glory. And they were ready to go, and they deserve credit for how they played in the game.
Yeah. No, in our Inside the Five, our preview, we said, you know, what does Alabama have to do to avoid the trap? And it start fast, you know, don't make silly penalties, no turnovers, nothing that would allow South Carolina to have any life. Just go out there, take care of business, do what you have to do, business-like, and finish strong. And really, honestly, of all of that, the thing that they did was finish strong. That was about it. I mean, it started right off the bat, third play of the game. You've got them in a 3rd and 4, and a defensive lineman jumps offsides, lack of discipline there. So you can't have those plays, obviously, in this game. You get the crowd into it. You give them a little momentum. They've got a quarterback that is really dangerous, obviously, Lenore Sellers. They've got some players, as you mentioned. I was really impressed with their defense, man. They had a lot of speed. They do a lot of really good things defensively. They're not bad at all on that side of the ball. They've struggled offensively. I mean, it's been pretty abysmal on that side of the ball. But anytime Lenore Sellers is in the game, he can make something happen. So you didn't want all those things to kind of gain momentum. And I think Alabama, in that way, played right into the trap. They did some things that allowed South Carolina to gain momentum, get the crowd into it, and then all of a sudden, you're in a real tussle. But fortunately, like I said, Alabama found a way to finish strong.
All right, I want to ask you about the running game. And again, Jam Miller is a solid back, does a lot of good things, everything from pass protection to catching the ball in the backfield to running it, at a decent clip. It's clear that Daniel Hill has moved up to the second spot ahead of Kevin Riley. And it's also clear that this is going to be a staff. They're going to play two backs in the SEC. That's it. That's as deep as the rotation is going to go. I'm not saying there won't be a third back that gets in there, but for the most part, they're going to play two backs. Run game wise, I would like to see more Daniel Hill. I just think he's the only back on that team that has that combination of size, speed, power, can catch the ball. I mean, he has some talent to me that, just because of his physicality and size that these other guys don't bring to the table. Your thoughts on Daniel Hill maybe having even more of a role in this offense coming out of the bye week?
Yeah, I mean, listen, what a dangerous receiver he is. What a great play Ty made on that little toss to him, you know, when Ty tucked it and defense kind of drew to him and Ty flipped it over the defenders right into his hands. But he's really dangerous as a receiver, Daniel Hill. And I tell you, one run that really sticks out to me is just where he showed vision. And he read his block really well. He cut it behind a block on the edge from Parker Brelsford. Brelsford pulled out. And, you know, he could have taken it to the outside, but he really read the block well and cut it inside. Those are the kind of things you look for. He's got vision. He seems to have some instincts. Not the fastest guy, but he gets on there, gets to the hole quickly enough and gets on the edge pretty quickly. I would love to see, continue to see more and more of Daniel Hill. Think he could be really valuable. Like you said, he is a sledgehammer now. He can make people miss. He can run over people, carry people for extra yardage. He just runs with a lot of authority. And I think that's something that he only carried, three times in this game. So would like to see him carry more. I'm not really sure what a Jam carried it 10 times, 10 for 26. I think the running backs only got 13 carries in this game. You know, you gotta somehow. This is one thing we talked about this yesterday. What's the ceiling for this team? Can they win a national championship? I just think that they've got to be more balanced. I mean, there's a lot of it that this game's on tie, and you know, sometimes he has to be perfect. And I just think that they've got to find a way to get some consistency in the running game. And I understand Bernard, and that's really good. I like those plays. But I think you've got to get something out of your running game, your traditional type running game.
I agree. And defensively, this is the modern era of college football, man. You can't expect offenses to not make plays. But I think with Alabama, you're seeing this defense they're doing a lot of good things. I mean, had pick six for the second straight week. The fumble late forced by Lawson and recovered by Keenan was really the winning play in the game. Everybody looks at Bernard's touchdown, but that was the play that gave Alabama a chance to win that game in regulation. So this defense is doing a lot of good things. I guess this is just, you just have to live with it. They're gonna give up some plays, and you're gonna be scratching your head thinking, my gosh, like the play that Sellers hit after the fourth down attempt. I mean, first timeout, they get behind the defense, but they make plays too. I mean, it seems like it's just a high risk, high reward. This is not a I know they call themselves a swarm defense, but they don't force a ton of three and outs. I don't see this mentality of, just where they just eat people up, but they do seem to make plays. And they do a lot of good things on defense. I'd still like to see them be more consistent, Roddy, but I think at this point in the season, this defense is it is what it is. The high-risk, high-reward type defense. That's the way I see it.
But they are stingy with points. That's the good thing.
Exactly.
You know, that is the really good thing. Because Texas A&M, I know, a lot of people talking about their defense, and you think back, they gave up over 40 to Notre Dame, or close to it. It was a lot of points they gave up to Notre Dame. But they gave up 42 to Arkansas. I think they beat Arkansas 45-42 just a week earlier. Of course, they dominated LSU this past Saturday night. Even Georgia. I mean, look, you and I, we certainly respect Kirby Smart and the defenses that they've always put on the field and his expertise there. And, they've given up a lot of points in some games. So, it's just more difficult, I think, to play defense now. But I do think the one thing that's good about this defense is that they are stingy when it comes to giving up points. They find a way somehow inside that red zone to stiffen up, force field goals or make a play and maybe put a team in where they have a long field goal attempt, whatever it is. They just seem to have something to, inside that red zone that, helps them.
All right, we're almost out of time, Rod. You already mentioned the bye. This just lays out beautifully. Do you think Alabama can run the table?
In the regular season?
Yeah, in the regular season, win these last four.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think, it's all there for them now. I think when we looked at this gauntlet initially, it was overwhelming. And I think what Alabama went through with Georgia, Vandy, Missouri, and Tennessee was overwhelming. I agree with what somebody told me. I'm not sure there's a couple of teams in the country that could have withstood that. So that was really impressive. Now, as you look at it, LSU's in the midst of a lot of change, obviously, with Brian Kelly's situation being fired. And so they're going through a lot of that stuff. You can't take that game lightly by any means. I mean, don't start all of a sudden thinking that because they're going to come to town with some good players. But I feel better about that game. And then Oklahoma, you've got, here, obviously, that'll be a big advantage having them at home. And I think Oklahoma defensively is really, really good. Obviously, Eastern Illinois. And then you got to go to Auburn. And, that might be as tough a game as they have left, obviously. Might be the toughest game they have left. Not shortchanging LSU or Oklahoma, but going down there. Auburn might have gained some momentum this weekend. Maybe that quarterback change helps him. We'll find out. But that's certainly, regardless, it's going to be a real challenge to go down there. It'll be Kalen DeBoer's first time down there. So it'll be a new experience for them. And but, yes, I do think Alabama can run the table here at the end.
All right, Ronnie, great stuff. fill in our listeners on Tider Insider.
Yep, TiderInsider.com. It's only $48 a year. You can get instant access with your credit card if you prefer. There is an address there to send a check. Gives you all our premium information. Also, all sports forum, our community there. I mean, it is a ton of stuff going on there. A lot of talk, a lot of discussion, a lot of basketball talk yesterday. So it's all right there on TiderInsider.com.
Thanks, Rod.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
All right, Chase, let's do this. This is 9:56. This hour has just absolutely flown by. Chase, kill that dial tone, please. Let's go ahead and let's close out the show right here. And let's get to the break. Let's go ahead and close out this first hour. And we'll come back with hour number two of the Gary Harris Show. This first hour absolutely flew by. Let's close out hour number one, and we'll be back with the second hour. Get this beeping going away of the Gary Harris Show. This hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. We're coming right back.
Doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. Alabama Credit Union, loans for real life. Visit alabamacu.com to learn more. Some rules and restrictions apply. See if you're eligible for membership, then join today and feel good about your money.
Rain diminishing this morning, just a few isolated showers this afternoon and tonight. Otherwise, cloudy and cool. The high today, 61. The low tonight, 52. Tomorrow, a mixture of clouds and sunshine. A few widely scattered showers. The high, 64. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Chris Perfect.
In Sunday Night Baseball, Aaron Rodgers met his former team, and the former team won. Green Bay Packers dispatched the Steelers in Pittsburgh 35-25. Packers quarterback Jordan Love with 360 yards and three touchdowns in this game. Veteran wide receiver Tyler Lockett is signing with the Las Vegas Raiders on Monday. This is putting Lockett back with his former teammate, quarterback Geno Smith, a Seattle reunion. The LSU Tigers have parted ways with head football coach Brian Kelly, opting to pay Kelly his $54 million buyout. Details are still all being finalized at this time for the deal. Kelly went 19-10 at LSU, dismissal coming after a loss on Saturday to Texas A&M. And in the NBA on Sunday night, Lakers...
Thread.com. Your West Alabama High School football score updates are presented by Bevel State Community College. Congressman Robert Adderholt and Taco Casa.
The Gary Harris Show. UCM host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Here we go, hour number two of the Gary Harris Show for this Monday, October 27th, 2025. Gary Harris, Chase Brumfield with you. That first hour was jam-packed. It was phone calls and then content with Rodney Orr. And, boy, we did not get to anything much other than Alabama football. We did mention Brian Kelly getting fired. In this hour, I'm going to run down all these different firings and also the amount of money that Brian Kelly is going to make to – walk away from Baton Rouge. It is astronomical. It's unbelievable. It's broken down by the second, the minute, the hour, the day, the week, the month, and the year. You're not going to believe it. But also in this second hour, we'll have Casey Smith on golf at 10:30. If we get an opportunity, we'll get to Kalen DeBoer audio post game from South Carolina on Saturday. And right now, we're going to jump out on the Gary Harris Show hotline and welcome in the sheriff, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Gary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well.
Great. You know, as chaotic as everything seems in the Southeastern Conference right now, coaches being fired, coaches, you know, people talking about who's going to get hired, all like that. But one thing's for darn sure, Gary, that stands out to me about this conference, especially on the football side, and there is not one bit of lack of money. As of this morning, the buyouts total about $130 million. There's no shortage of money in the SEC, so they can stop singing that song right there.
Well, Tom, yes and no. As long as you've got donors that are willing to pick up the tab for this, then yeah, there seems to be no shortage of money. But at some point, I don't think every school can do it. I don't think every school can just fire these guys, owing them this much money, and expect to bring in another staff and pay them. I think you're going to start seeing it change the way this is done. I think you're going to see schools that hire coaches without these astronomical buyouts. You know, everybody doesn't have the resume to demand this kind of money, yet all these SEC schools want to pay these guys like they're Nick Saban. You're going to start seeing that come to an end, I do believe, Tom. I do. I think that this
is... Well, it should come to an end.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've heard you say it. I said it. And Rodney and others have said it, your guests, who are kind of more in tune than the rest of us to some of this stuff. But it's for sure it is stupid to think that there got to be such a buyout like we're seeing in Jimbo Fisher and now with Kelly and so forth and so on. And I don't know what Billy Napier's buyout was. Do you?
No, it's a lot less. I want to say, Tom, that that's why they didn't fire him last year. I think they got it down to around $18 million, something like that, which is still a lot of money.
Right.
But you know, you make a good point in that, you know, what other businesses sign contracts like this? What other line of work are you paid for if you're too bad at your job? The way these contracts that these ADs and universities have gotten into with these agents, they're not responsible. These are not responsible contracts. I mean, it's out of whack. No, most of these coaches don't deliver. Most of them don't deliver what you're paying them to deliver, which is the national
championship. Exactly. remember the lady that was athletic director at USC, and they fired Kiffin, and they were getting ready to hire a coach and all this kind of stuff. She said, well, I'll tell you what, don't come with Jimmy Sexton as the agent. If you do, the deal's off. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well,
I do.
One way to get out of the play is negotiating into a contract that has a big buyout, is it not? Because every one of these that we're seeing is from Jimmy and him negotiating that buyout for him.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing what he has been able to get his clients, the deals he's been able to get them. And like I said, every now and then there's a special coach, and I get it. You pay over market value for them. But you bring in these guys from, you know, from group of five teams, unless they're pro, that don't have the resumes, and you want to pay them like they're Nick Saban, just because that's the perception that you want to put out there. Quit overpaying these guys. If Lane Kiffin's going to have the market. He's going to be able to demand from Florida, from LSU, and from Ole Miss. Okay? He's going to get mega dollars either to stay where he's at or go somewhere else. But if you can't hire Lane Kiffin, and even he doesn't have a national championship or an SEC championship. But if you don't get the guy you're going after the first time, Tom, and you have to settle for somebody else, don't pay him like they're your top guy. Just say, we're not going to pay him. We're going to pay him like they're our second choice. But none of them want to do that. They all want to act like they're getting the guy that they want. Oh, this was our first choice all along. No, it wasn't.
Is the buyout put in the contract to keep other people from coming to get your coach? What is it?
I think they say that it is, but it seems to be a one-way buyout most of the time. The buyout is leans a lot more toward the coach than it does the school. In other words, if the school wants to hire your coach, another school wants to hire your coach, very rarely is there a buyout so big that the other school won't hire him anyway. So, like I said, these seem to be one-sided contracts. I don't understand it why from this, but that's the way they do it, man. Hey, you're a big-time coach. We're gonna pay you $75-80 million, and if you fail at your job, we're still gonna pay you $30-50 million. That seems to be the way they do it.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary.
All right, thank you, Tom. And real quickly, let me read this to you folks here, and I'm going to also run down the list of coaches that have been fired since the start of the season. But this is what Brian Kelly is going to make in his buyout. Per second, 31 cents a second, $18.46 a minute, $1,107 an hour, $26,582 a day, $186,076 a week, and $808,333,000 a month. That's what he's going to be making until his buyout is paid out. $808,333 a month. A month. To not have a job. And from what I've read from a lot of the LSU reporters, Woodward told Kelly that he could keep his job, but he'd have to fire his offensive coordinator. Now, that's just what I read. And no wonder he said no. He didn't want to keep his job. And they gave him a chance to, you're gonna tell me you're going to fire some people on my staff? Just fire me. Go ahead and pay me my $808,000 a month. I'm sure he just told them they could stick it. Anyway, that's where we're at. I mean, this stuff is just absolutely crazy right now. What's going on? All right, I want to talk to you about a new client here on the show that if you're a man and you want to feel better, Game Day Men's Health, located at 1013 Street East in Tuscaloosa, is a one-stop shop for men, offering convenient, expert-backed care for all men looking to feel and perform their best. They specialize in testosterone health, erectile dysfunction treatment, weight loss therapy, and all types of other treatments that can get you feeling your best. And we all want to feel good. Free consultations. Step one is a complete intake and simple blood work. Get results in 15 minutes. Step two, meet with a clinic director who specializes in hormone therapy and men's health. And step three, begin your customized treatment plan. Fatigue, stress, poor sleep, low libido, and weight gain aren't just everyday annoyances. They can be signs that your body needs support. At Game Day Tuscaloosa, they get to the root of these symptoms and deliver treatment plans tailored to your goals. What you can expect? Boosted energy levels, improved motivation and mood, deeper and more restful sleep, reduced belly fat, stronger workouts, and faster muscle recovery, as well as natural hair regrowth support. My gosh, this is something, if you're a man and you're struggling, get to Game Day Men's Health, 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa, and start feeling better immediately. All right, we're going to come back with Kalen DeBoer audio unless we get phone calls. If we get phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline, we'll take them at 205-342-9904. Casey Smith on golf coming up to the bottom of the hour. It's been active this morning, and also I'm going to get to all these coaches that have been fired. Three in the SEC. It's unbelievable, the era of college football that we are in. We haven't mentioned Alabama men's and women's basketball. Both won exhibition games yesterday. Now it's time for the regular season. We'll be back after this.
West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Next week, the city of Tuscaloosa will host a special ceremony at the Benjamin Barnes YMCA to unveil statues honoring the Marshall Four. The tribute recognizes Tuscaloosa natives who attended Marshall University to play football as some of the first African-American athletes from Tuscaloosa on scholarships at a major university. For more details about the event, log on to TuscaloosaThread.com. Daylight saving time ends on Sunday, November 2nd at 2 o'clock in the morning when clocks officially fall back 1 hour.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after-hour
store collection and fill your yard with holiday joy. Whatever your style, find everything to get your holidays started at the Home Depot.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain diminishing this morning, just a few isolated showers this afternoon and tonight. Otherwise cloudy and cool. The high today 61, the low tonight 52. Tomorrow a mixture of clouds and sunshine. A few widely scattered showers, the high 64. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Roll Tide, the best sports talk, period. Your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 20 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Wow, busy morning this morning on the Gary Harris Show. We have hit it and we have not stopped. Let's jump out on the Gary Harris Show hotline and welcome Steve here in Tuscaloosa. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Gary. I appreciate you taking my call, bud. I just wanted to get your opinion just real quick. Between Brian Kelly and James Franklin, who do you think deserved to be, I don't know if deserves the right word or not, but this just for argument's sake, deserved to be fired the most?
Well, that's a good question. It's a tough question for me to answer because I don't think either one of them deserved to be fired when they were fired. I don't like in-season firings. Coaches who have the resumes that they have. They have good resumes, both of them. And you've invested all that kind of, you know, that much money. I mean, these schools are going to, the donors and the schools are going to do what they want to do, so it doesn't matter what I think. But there's still a chance to have a good season for both of these coaches. But with this really polarizes where we're at now. And Saban predicted all this. You know, used to going to a bowl game meant something. You know, you still... There was a time when 9-3 or 8-3 when they played 11 games and a bowl victory was considered a good season. Now, and again, that's part of that's the salaries that they pay these guys. I understand that. But, and I know, you know, I guess they get out in front of it and all this stuff and portal and all that. But I wouldn't fire coaches in the middle of the season that have two or three losses. I just wouldn't. Now, to answer the question that you asked,
Yeah, just play it after the end of the season.
I would. That's the way I would like to see it done. But if you asked me which one deserved to be fired, or I would have fired probably Kelly before I would have fired Franklin. I mean, Franklin had that team last year within, you know, a few plays in the national championship game. He did. And yeah, they had a tough start to the season. But I probably would have stayed with him longer than I would have Kelly, because it, with LSU, if I had to fire, if you're going to tell me, which one of these guys would you fire first, I wouldn't have fired either one of them, but I would have fired Brian Kelly first, because it just doesn't feel like that it's going to get better at LSU. And at Penn State, I know there's a body of work there. He doesn't win against top five and top 10 teams, but not everybody, has great records against top five and top 10 teams. It's hard to beat those teams. Right. That's why they're good teams. So, I don't like the way this is being done. Having said that, when you make this kind of money and you have these stupid contracts, if people want to fire you, you're disappointed. But once you get over the bruised ego, and you tell your wife, honey, our bank account, we got generational wealth here. So, and both these guys, I know James Franklin will coach again. He's already, and I imagine Brian Kelly will coach again too. So they're really not losers in the sense that what they have in front of them, they can do whatever they want to do with their lives. But in terms of football sense, nobody wants to be fired. You know that. These coaches, they want to be successful. They want to win. But that's the world we're living in, Steve. So,
well, one last question, and I'll let you go. Do you see James Franklin coming back to the SEC, filling one of these spots?
I think it's a possibility. I do. I think he did a pretty good job at Vanderbilt. We're looking at what Vanderbilt is doing now, but he had some success at Vanderbilt before they had all these resources. He had some success at Vanderbilt, made him competitive when they didn't have NIL and they didn't have the portal and they hadn't, changed the academic requirements for athletes a little bit. So I could see him coming back to the SEC. I certainly think he's one that he's going to try to coach next year. I don't get the sense at all that he wants to sit out. Brian Kelly, on the other hand, what is he, 64, I think, Steve? 63 or 4. He probably will be a little less anxious about coaching again, but I think that he'll get a shot somewhere, and I think he probably will take it. And I always say coaches coach. That's why, I see these guys sometimes. I remember when Terry Bowden was flying up to New York every week and sitting up there with John Saunders. In fact, I was up there for the holidays one year, and I was on Times Square, and I looked up there, and there was John Saunders and Terry Bowden, in that beautiful glass studio they had overlooking Times Square. And, he gave that up to get on to take a job at North Alabama and ride buses, because football coaches want to coach football.
That's right. I think
both those guys will get back in it at some point.
Gary, I appreciate it. I agree with everything you just said, and great show as always.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you, my friend. 10:25, we are going to make a point to get some of this Kalen DeBoer audio on. I say this every week, and we can't, but I was going to try to have Chase run a little bit of it in this segment, but I don't want to do that because I want to get Casey Smith on time, and then we maybe can save Kalen DeBoer for the final second segment. By the way, no press conferences today at Alabama for the bye week. So there's no game week press conferences because there's no game. So there'll be no Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Grubb, or Kane Womack today. It'll be a shortened practice schedule this week as these players take a break. But here, this gives me an opportunity to do what I said I was going to do earlier, and that's run down all these firings for you. And first, let's just start with the SEC. With the SEC alone, you've had LSU, Florida, and Arkansas already fire coaches. 3 out of the 16 jobs in the SEC are available right now. Unbelievable. And we're a little more than halfway through the season. Other Power 4 schools that have made coaching changes: Penn State, UCLA, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, and Stanford. Overall, outside of the Power 4, you've also had UAB make a change, Colorado State, Oregon State. So you've got 11 Division I jobs open right now. 11. 8 Power 4 vacancies. Let that sink in for a minute. Some teams have played 8 games. Some teams have played 7. and we've got 11 Division One openings, 8 Power Four openings, and that's not counting the jobs that are going to open up at the end of the season, or some that still might be open before the end of the season. And these are good jobs. Here's the thing I go back to. There are going to be more good jobs available than there are good coaches to fill them. There just aren't that many what I call resume coaches anymore. There just aren't that many coaches that have a resume worthy of the kind of money that these kind of schools pay their coaches. But they pay these coaches that type of money, whether they're worthy of it or not, because they want to win the press conference. And they want the perception to be that they are hiring a guy who is going to win a national championship. So you got to pay him like he's going. Because if you pay him less, the worry is that you won't be able to attract top players, because players won't believe that you're as invested in your coach as you should be. But we'll see this. I'll say this about Indiana. Yeah, you know, and let's don't forget this. I mean, a lot of what happens with these coaches, too, is like Florida State, you know. They had that great year a couple of years ago. Well, they extended the guy, and now they can't afford to fire him. There's a school that's struggling to fire a coach. They'd like to make a move. So it's not every school that can keep firing these guys and paying out these buyouts. But Indiana just extended Cignetti again. We'll see if long-term that works. But look at Indiana. They went to, you know, in Cignetti's case, he waited a long time to be a head coach. And he came up through the ranks, and Indiana plucked him, and look what he's done. You're going to see, I think, more of these Power 5 schools or Power 4 schools try to find these coaches maybe that are at a lower level of football. And, of course, Florida did that with Billy Napier, and it didn't work out, Sunbelt Billy. But there are great coaches that are down there that have head coaching experience rather than going the assistant ranks and trying to pull a coordinator who may or may not be a great head coach. And Lane Kiffin, for all his success, and I like him, I think he's a terrific offensive coach. I think he's a great quarterback's coach. I thought he fooled around against Oklahoma on Saturday and almost cost him the game with some of those silly decisions he makes going forward to his own 25-yard line and things like that. But he is going to have probably his choice of either LSU, Florida, or remaining at Ole Miss. Great time to be Lane Kiffin. 10:29 on the Gary Harris Show. Hey, a reminder, the YMCA is ready for you and you're ready for the Y. It's just that simple. 2300 13th Street. It's where I work out. I'd love for you to join me. The YMCA of Tuscaloosa. Great staff, great community of members, and a great facility. Everything you need is in place. The Y is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. We're coming back with Casey Smith on golf next here on the Gary Harris Show.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet.
3,000 overbooked value only at Tuscaloosa Mazda. TuscaloosaMazda.com. Based on KBB Fair Trade Value on select models with approved credit. See dealer for details.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily happy hour specials.
Tuscaloosa Tractor, Castaway Fish Co., Crimson Pride Hunting and Fishing, Precision Armory, Junction Grocery, Urbans, Military Surplus R Us, and Adams Heating and Cooling.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:30. 8:33, we're going to break away from the football discussion, which has been hot and heavy this morning, and talk a little golf with Casey Smith, and probably talk a little football with Casey, too. But good morning, Casey. How are you?
Hey, doing well, Gary. I'm sure I'm like a lot of the Tuscaloosa natives. Your vibes are high around the tide.
Yeah, they've completed the first two legs of what could be a national championship contending season, that's for sure. 7-1, undefeated in the SEC. Now it's a four-game stretch to the finish line, and then hopefully we'll be on. But I want to start out with the Bank of Utah Championship. And you and I discussed this last week. Some of these events, the fields aren't as strong. It's an opportunity. And we're seeing, again, just we see college golfers that are ready to compete on tour, Corn Ferry golfers. And in this case, Michael Brennan, who won three events on the America's Tour, PGA Tour America's Tour, to get promoted to the Corn Ferry Tour, and then gets a sponsor's exemption into the Bank of Utah Championship, and then wins the doggone thing. I've never heard of the guy.
Played at Wake Forest in a superstar stud in the rising. Michael Brennan was supposed to be, to your point, was supposed to be at a conference in Canada helping one of his sponsors out. The plan was for him, I heard him talk about this, was to hit a few balls in the simulator off some swing tips because the weather's up there is already too cold and have a closest-to-pin competition on a golf simulator. Instead, he got a call from a sponsor, you know, to be in the Bank of Utah Championship. He obviously made the most of it. And in his first PGA Tour start, the 23-year-old number one player on the PGA Tour of Americas won by four shots over Rico Hoey. And really, he had a five-shot lead and was cruising for the day, but it flashed back to where all this changed for him and his life started changing is last year's PGA Tour of Americas championship. And if you didn't know where the PGA Tour of Americas is, it's a feeder tour to the Corn Ferry Tour. So you get a lot of PGA Tour, you guys, Cannon Clayton plays on the tour, on the PGA Americas Tour. Anyway, Brennan, birdied the 11th hole last year, stretches lead by five, and a win would have vaulted him into fourth on the season-long points list, securing a Corn Ferry Tour status for 2025, and an exemption to the final stage of Q School. Brennan was unaware of his position on the leaderboard, and he made a sloppy bogey on the 12th, and he just kept slipping. He made doubles. Made a double on 13th, a quintuple bogey on the par 3 14th. And in just three holes, he lost seven shots, finished with an eagle to tie for third. But the damage was done. He had thrown away the tournament and his potential Corn Ferry Tour status. And so, he didn't make it through second stage of Q School later in the year. And so he had to go back to the America's Tour. He won three out of four starts in the America's Tour to end the year, to earn full Corn Ferry Tour status for 2026, only to hold that for 1 month, to then now get this win today or yesterday. And, you know, he gets his full status through 2027. He shot 67, 65, 64, 66. He had the best driving tournament of the year on the PGA Tour. He gained 7.6 shots. You know, you're at altitude. It's a larger – there's a lot bigger fairways at the Bank of Utah Championship. But regardless, everyone had the same advantage. And actually, one of only seven players to ever win in three fewer starts on the PGA Tour, Nick Dunlap being the other who won on his first start and sponsored invite. So doing some great company, really set himself up for a big career. And as we've said a lot of times, a lot of guys just need starts. And to go take advantage of that, I mean, he was going to play this event to try to improve some status and you know, create some momentum going into his Corn Ferry Tour season next year to try to then, you know, maximize on that to get on the PGA Tour. And what we've learned is when those guys come from the Corn Ferry Tour, they don't always get all the starts that they want, given how some of these elevated events work now, and they haven't really gotten that system worked out. There's one way you can guarantee yourself safety, and it's through a win. And, you know, it's good to get that win because look at Nick Dunlap, who had a struggle of a year, but he's got another year. If you get out there, it's your first year out there and you have a struggle, you still got that other year that you can go out and get it fixed. And but I don't see any slowing this guy down. He's winning at a warp speed rate, and it seems like just an incredible. He drives the ball as good as I watched some of it. He drives the ball as good as anybody out on tour. Period.
Wow, it's yeah, you're right. Sponsors exemption, the first to win on that since Dick Dunlap. Speaking of Dunlap, and we talk a lot about him because it happened so fast for him. And we talk about when you're in an event like this, they're all great players. We know that, but this isn't as strong a field as many PGA Tour events. And he missed another cut. And listen, as you know, Casey, these top college players, they already have their team, and he had a team in place even before he got on PGA Tour. But still, he won that America's Express Championship. Everything moved up. He won in another event, the Barracuda, last year, and then this season has been a not good. And I wonder, again, not knowing the inner workings of how it works to when these golf teams, I've asked you this before, and it's a tough question, but at what point does he start to take a look at tweaking some things, whether it's a caddy change, and we know Hunter Hamrick is, you know, a great friend for him and has been there for him, or instructor change, because he's really not where he needs to be. And you're right, he's got another year, but that year will go by fast if you don't start making some cuts.
Yeah, I mean, look, he shot 66 in the first round, and I thought he was going to be okay, and had a bogey, but he really had he started on the back nine. I was following it, thinking, let's see if he's got that big miss going. He didn't have it going. He turned it 2 under. He bogeyed the second hole, which was his 11th hole, and then he birdied 4 holes coming in, so shot 33. I was like, wow, Nick Dunlap's maybe he's fighting his way back. And then whatever happened, you know, especially as I mentioned, easiest driving course probably all season on tour. And then he had 4 bogeys in a double, shot 76. So the other opposite of that, he had that big miss on 11 when he made the double. And, you know, that's part of that comeback and part of why it's good that he's got some starts ahead. But I think you're right. At some point, probably end of season, a few more events left, I would expect to see him in those events. I'll be shocked if he's not in those events. They go to Cabo next week, and then they go to Bermuda after that, and then they go to the RSM to end. So they're off this week, and then they have 3 straight to finish the year. I think we'll see him in all 3 of those events, and we should. And I hope he gains some momentum and then says, hey, you know, let's reevaluate and see what we have here, what we need to do to have a really good year next year. That talent's still in there to go out and do what he did in that 66. You can still see it's all there. It's got a mental thing. Golf is such a sport that requires you to be clear-headed and confident mentally. And, it can happen so fast in golf. So hopefully he reevaluates, makes the changes that are needed, whatever that is. And sometimes it's just a swing instructor. Sometimes it's just new grips, new clubs, he's already done the break thing. I don't think the break thing works. I'd like to see him play a lot. I hope he plays the last 3 tournaments of the year and goes out and gets some confidence. He needs a good tournament. One good tournament, probably one top 10, probably erases all of the stuff.
I'm with you. I'm with you on the breaks. I mean, listen, man, you're not at that point in your career. You need to be playing. You need to be playing golf. Who was it? You may help me. There was a guy back in the older days. I forget who it was. I wish I could remember. But he played every week. He played every week on tour. And they asked him, this is probably, this is a 70s, 80s guy, about why he never took a break. He said, I play golf for a living. Why would I take a break? I'm a golfer. I play golf.
It's okay, not him, that's his work. Thought, right?
Yeah, you know, that, we don't see that always now.
The one thing I think about Sungjae Im is he lives over here in Atlanta. Will Wilcox, who's an Alabama guy, is his caddy. He plays almost weekly, right? He's even playing a career right now. I've been following them. They're over there. He just keeps it dialed in. Well, he doesn't finish in the top 10 on the PGA Tour end of the season every year. But guess what? He makes the FedEx Cup every year. He's finishing about 15th, 16th, 17th every year. Incredible way to live. And he never gets too far out of sync. Even when he's playing bad, if he missed a couple cuts, he's playing again the next week, playing again the next week. And I think there's something to be said for that. What you said is right. Play golf for a living. And it's not like you're playing for not a lot of money. I mean, Brennan in a lower field size event still wins $1 million, right? It's huge money playing golf. So if all those, I mean, that's what Sung J.M. said. I heard him say, like, why would I not play? I'm playing for $2, $3, $4, or $5 million every week. I mean, it's my job. Everyone else shows up for their job.
Exactly. So maybe Nick Dunlap, as you said, will play these three events. And man, boy, if he could have a top 10, it would be welcome. Before we close it out, and then I'll ask you, you know, anything that you want to hit on, but Alabama has a lot of players on tour. You have Justin Thomas, who's a superstar. You have Davis Riley, who's a multiple tour winner. You know, Mullinax, a lot of guys have won some events, but outside of JT, there's not that guy that every week you expect to be up there. We was hoping it would be Dunlap, but a lot of guys out there grinding. And is there a player, whether it's, you know, Davis Riley, who's been highly inconsistent, still Dunlap, outside of JT, that has the Alabama connection that you could say watch for that has superstar potential? Anybody that grabs your attention?
I mean, yeah, and I'll even give you this real quick. So FedEx Cup Fall, Justin Thomas, 7th, Seth Straka, 30th, Bud Cauley, 47th, Davis Riley, 71. Lee Hodges, 116. Frankie Zappa, 138. Dunlap, 144. Mullinax, 155. And then, you know, you start getting back down the list from there. You got Pat Gazar, 179. And the one that didn't have the year that's got the chance, not from out University of Alabama, is Gordon Sargent. He's got all world game. But again, it's sort of like Dunlap. His game fell off as well. And it makes you wonder if they played so much as juniors and kids, if they didn't just catch that burnout. But it's still Nick Dunlap, right? Nick Dunlap is the most talented and best player, not Justin Thomas, that comes from the University of Alabama. And then, you know, from consistent perspective, I think we'll continue to see Steph Straka, who lives in Birmingham, and we cover some better. Davis Riley, he's got that golf swing that's, you know, poor man's Adam Scott or whatever you want to say. It's like really good, incredible golf swing. But he had that big miss in there too, which is strange. And those would be the two most talented players, Nick Dunlap and Davis Riley. And I really do think this kid at Alabama right now that's sort of come out of nowhere, because I trust the people that have played enough golf with him. This William Jennings kid is really good and has got a chance to be interesting to see if he has a great spring if he turns pro. That's really something I'd be keeping an eye on. Hopefully he, you know, I think you maybe can learn from others that playing college golf really does prepare you, and rushing out there, if you're really not ready, is not a great idea, because even the best that are ready, we're seeing struggles. I mean, Gordon Sargent didn't just, you know, look at Bobby Wyatt, look at Tom Lutt, like look at those guys that have gone out there who are can't miss, right? So you got to be ready. And I think Nick Dunlap's ready. I think it's just a matter of time before they get that figured out. You can't win the level he's won, have the resume he's had, to not be able to get this fixed.
Great stuff, Casey. Anything that you want to cover in the game of golf that we didn't hit on?
No, we're in a little bit of slower time. This is an off week, and then we have three huge weeks that are going to be life-changing weeks for these guys. If they keep their card, if they get in all the events, if they get their game straightened out. So that's the college golf season is also on the break till the spring. And really, we get pretty kicked back up week after next with those three events, and then it goes into Tigers event. So four weeks of really good golf ahead.
And just a real quick comment from you on Bama pulling it out in Columbia on Saturday afternoon. Keep the, as we said at the top, keep the season rolling.
I tell you what, there's this team right here embodies the team aspect. Proud of them. The day that I called in for this show, after the Florida State game, the sky was falling. And now the vibes couldn't be higher. And, you know, we got a chance to win it all. We're as good as any team. And, boy, I love the whole team thing. I love the play calling. I think this quarterback is a really good quarterback and an even better leader.
Great stuff. Thank you, Casey.
And basketball won yesterday, too. I think we got a chance to have the best basketball team we've ever had this year.
Well, that's saying something, the way he's turned that roster over. But
Furman kind of held the ball there at the end a little bit, trying to make sure Alabama didn't get to 100, but they almost did anyway.
And he might kill me for saying this, but he does. He thinks we're pretty good too. So,
all right, good deal.
Any rat poison out there? Take care.
Thanks a lot, Casey. All right, 10:48, and we'll take a timeout. Phone lines are open, 205-342-9904. If we get a chance to try to get to some Kalen DeBoer, it just seems like we're not. Every Monday I try to play the Kalen DeBoer press conference Saturday. Hey, I'm not complaining. It means that we're busy. But if we get a chance to play a little bit of Kalen DeBoer, we will. But if we get a phone call, we'll take that. We'll come back and wrap it up after this.
On The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Monday edition of The Game, we're going to recap Alabama, South Carolina. We'll do it with the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good is sponsored by DanielMoreArt.com. And we'll take your phone calls. We'll talk to Drew DeArmond. We'll talk to Martin Houston, all starting at 2 p.m. on the Monday edition of The Game on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa.
Lowe's. We help. You save. Selection varies by location.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big-screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past, that has not been the case. And this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain diminishing this morning, just a few isolated showers this afternoon and tonight. Otherwise cloudy and cool. The high today 61, the low tonight 52. Tomorrow a mixture of clouds and sunshine. A few widely scattered showers, the high 64. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Where the season never ends. This is your home of Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:53. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show, and it has been nonstop this morning. And we appreciate all our callers, and we wanted to try to get to Kalen DeBoer, but again, we didn't have an opportunity. We do have Mr. Smith on the line, though. Mr. Smith, how are you? Jason, Mr. Smith, hang up on us.
I believe he did hang up on us.
All right, you call in. And you put Mr. in front of your name, very formal. The least you can do is stay on the line until we get to your phone call. Right, Chase?
Exactly.
Well, we hit the ground running this morning. I'm not in studio this morning, but we hit it right off the top, and just phone calls were lined up for us, which I get it, man. I think Alabama fans, Chase, are relieved more than anything else. And I'm sure that, Kristen's going to get into it on his show, of course, with his dad, Pastor Payne, Corey Miller, who, you know, was a great player at South Carolina. I had an inkling, you heard me say it last week, that I thought this would be a tougher game than a lot of people expected. But, you know, at the end of the day, you add them up. And Alabama won the game, Chase, and it's such a huge win, because you think about what we would be dealing with had they not won the game. Not only would you have two losses, one in the SEC, so you would be 6-2 instead of 8-1, or instead of 7-1, and you'd have, you'd be 4-1 in the SEC instead of 5-0, and the season would look dramatically different. So winning that game, if this turns out to be a great season, people will remember that South Carolina game, right?
I'm sorry, Gary, you're cutting in and out. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, I just said the win is so big, Chase, that had you lost the game, it would have changed the season dramatically. So if you go on and you have a championship season, you'll look back at that South Carolina game and you'll say, man, surviving in Columbia, finding a way, it was a huge win for Alabama.
Oh, without a doubt, Gary. We're probably going to think about this in one of those like moments to remember at the end of the season, how detrimental this win was for Alabama. I think there's so many layers to it that people don't understand, that to win in such a gritty environment like Columbia, South Carolina, and to do it against a team that was throwing the kitchen sink and everything at you, and you survived not only offensive struggles, but a lot of things that just was going wrong. And then for Alabama to turn around in the second half, pull out a win, and focus on the next game, which has a bye week, which is nice. It does a lot, Gary. So I'm proud of the Crimson Tide, and it's probably going to be one of those things where, like, if this didn't happen, like the South Carolina win, I don't know what the season would be in terms of, like, the height and the ceiling of this team.
Yeah, no doubt. These are the kind of games, you know, you're expected to beat South Carolina because they had, you know, four losses. And so it's more of a relief, but it's a big win because of what it would have meant if you did not win the game. That's why it's so big. And to keep it going, and now to have the bye, they're set up beautifully. They're set up beautifully. I think they can run the table. Again, based on my preseason predictions of 10-2, but I had them losing at Georgia and at South Carolina. So that means I've got them winning the next four. You know, I've got them winning at home against LSU, Oklahoma, and Eastern Illinois, and the Iron Bowl. And if you do that, you're 11-1, you're in Atlanta, playing for an SEC championship and a top four seed, and you've already wrapped up a spot in the college football playoff, whether you win that game or not in Atlanta. So a chance to do something special for this Alabama football team in year number two under Kalen DeBoer. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Gary Harris Show for this Monday. And a reminder that lunch is right around the corner. People start getting, you know, lunch at 11 o'clock. So if you want authentic Mexican cuisine with terrific service and a great atmosphere, Los Carrascos, with locations in Northport on Highway 43 North and on Skyland Boulevard East in Tuscaloosa. Check it out. I love Los Carrascos, and you will too. They got daily lunch specials too that are great, great prices. So get by and have a Mexican lunch on a Monday. Hey, I didn't get a chance to talk about the weather much. I loved the rain yesterday, a rainy Sunday, nice and cool. Man, living here on the river the way that I do. Let me tell you something, Dave and listeners, the color has changed already in 2 days from what it was on Saturday to what it is this morning. It's beautiful. Loving the fall. All right, the Miller's Edge is coming up next. Have a great day, everybody. Catch me on TV tonight with your local sports on WVUA 23. And then back here tomorrow morning for the Tuesday edition of the Gary Harris Show at 9 a.m. Have a great day.